Hello, and welcome to episode 56 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Steven Seagraves. It's June 19th, 2014, and I'm joined by Rolo Veloso and Foz Mahmood. Hey, guys.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You guys doing all right?
Yes.
Yeah, on the road. Everybody's on the road. I'm on the road. I know Foz is on the road. Rolo, are you at home?
I just got back from Brazil.
You have to give us the FIFA update then. I think we could start off the show like that.
All right. Well, first of all, as this goes to print, Spain has been eliminated. This just in. So the reigning champs have been eliminated. But yeah, I was down in Rio de Janeiro. As Foz and I discussed in the last episode, the reais situation with the currency. So I went down there and there were some concerns with security and protest and all sorts of things. And I think it's very regionalized in Brazil, what's going on in each city. So Sao Paulo, for example, from what I heard, you know, you couldn't really tell the World Cup was going on. It's not that festive. But Rio, where I was, it was just one big party. Everybody that decided to go down to the World Cup that didn't have tickets, or maybe they have tickets for different teams, kind of made their base in Rio. So Rio is used to having lots of tourists for Carnival and all that stuff. And from what the taxi drivers were telling me, they really stepped up security there because the Olympics are there in 2016, the Summer Olympics. So they really had to show everybody, you know, they're capable of hosting such a big event.
Did you hear anything about Manaus? Because, I mean, that's kind of a remote one, and they're only holding four games there or something. But I was wondering what it was like there, if you heard anything.
Yeah, well, the smaller cities like that, actually, the people there are kind of, you know, they're happy they're having. I mean, there's still a lot of drama with the money that was spent and instead of schools and the protests. But those cities have, it's kind of divided. Some people are very happy because there's a lot of extra tourism that otherwise wouldn't be there. But, you know, as far as the main cities that where everybody wanted to be at were the beach cities like Rio, Porto Alegre, and then Recife, Salvador, Bahia. Those cities, actually, people just said, you know what, we're going to make a beach vacation out of it as well. Because you have a lot of downtime between games. I only went down for one game, the Argentina-Bosnia game. But I was there for a few days, you know, hanging out on the beach, watching other games at the FIFA Fan Fest, which is actually located on the beach with this huge screen TV. And then all the little bars have TVs set up and flat screens. HD is not as dominant as we have it here in the States. So there was some low definition. The party atmosphere in Rio was amazing. I mean, especially for Argentina, we had thousands of people there. Just people drove cars, converted buses, trucks, anything. I mean, people were sleeping on the beach or parking their cars and basically camping on, like, the street. Like, it wasn't regular campgrounds. They were just wherever they could find a parking spot, that was the place they were sleeping.
So how long did it take you to get the airport when you were coming back then?
Well, the airport, it took about an hour and 40 minutes. On the way there, on the way back. On the way there, though, I flew to Buenos Aires first, and then I took the Emirates flight, which gets in at like midnight or 12:20 or something like that. And there was no traffic. And that taxi driver was like, "This is the best time to get to Rio." It took like 20 minutes. So 20 minutes on the arrival, an hour and 40 minutes on the way back.
Now, were you in Emirates first?
I was, actually. But you know what? I missed all the fun because the back of the plane was one big party. So many people from Argentina were going, chanting. I mean, they had flags out. And the flight attendants kept trying to tell me to go back there. And every time I went back there, the chanting stopped.
That's awesome. Oh, so did Argentina win?
Argentina won 2-1. The Maracanã Stadium, where the final is going to be hosted, was completely redone for the World Cup. They tore down the stadium, the roof of the stadium, piece by piece. And then when they rebuilt it, I think it's carbon fiber or something to make it lighter. They reduced the number of seats down to like 75,000 from what it used to be. And it just looks really amazing. There's not one bad seat in the house. Even the last row in the upper level has a great view. The security was insane, though. You like 5 or 6 blocks or even further away from the stadium, you had to go through like 3 different checkpoints with these police like in riot gears. And they were checking for tickets and checking for flags. They had all these dimensions that, you know, your flag couldn't be like larger than XYZ or something like that. You couldn't bring anything that had a flagpole. Of course, people snuck them in, but
how do you sneak a flagpole in?
There's people on the inside. There's people were sneaking in drums, and you're not supposed to bring in drums. So I think it's They have all these people on the inside. You're also not supposed to smoke in the stadium. And I saw somebody report a person smoking. And the guy's like, well, you know, they're smoking, so we just let them smoke.
Did you sneak in your Vuvuzela this time?
The Vuvuzela?
The Vuvuzela, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I actually, the last one I got from South Africa, I gave to somebody. It's annoying enough to hear it. And but yeah, it was great. I mean, the game was amazing. Argentina won. The subway ride to the stadium, it was free if you have a match ticket. It's like 4 hours before the game, it's free. And then on the return, it's completely free. But the whole subway was filled with fans just chanting the whole time. It was insane. At one point, they thought the train was going to derail, so they made up a song about the train derailing.
So it wasn't like the New Jersey Transit experience during the Super Bowl.
No, it was nothing like that, which surprised me. I was expecting that, and it actually flowed very smoothly. A lot of people took buses, and those took a long time because they had to go through all these checkpoints. But the traffic in Rio is pretty bad to begin with. But nothing like Sao Paulo. Sao Paulo, on a regular day, could take you 2 hours to get anywhere. So on game days, they were saying plan like 3.5 hours to get to the game.
Wow. And they were setting up watching stations when I was in Germany. And, I mean, people were already kind of like staking out like where they're going to sit. Because the day I left, I think, was the day before the World Cup started.
Okay.
So they were setting up in all the beer gardens and everything. They were setting up giant TVs. And you know, people had already like kind of set up like camping gear, like the one park in Munich you can camp in. And people had set up camp like tents. I was like, you guys don't own a TV?
I think people like that want to just go watch it with everybody else, because when I flew home from South Africa in 2010, I had a connection in Frankfurt with a forced overnight. And in the center of town, they had the fan fest set up, and the World Cup's not even there, but they had an official FIFA fan fest with a watching like two different screens. So you watch the same game, because the last game in the first round is simultaneous. So there's no funny business. So they had two different screens set up. You could watch, you know, one team on one side and another on the other screen.
Huh. Interesting. Well, thanks for the report.
Yeah, maybe I will be going back for another report.
Oh, really? You're planning on going back?
There was talk with the guys I was down there with. They want to go down to see if Argentina, right now as it stands, if they win the group, they would play in Sao Paulo, which I want no part of. But the game after that, if they advance, would be in Brasilia, which would be kind of cool to go to. I mean, I've never been there, so.
Nice.
We'll see, though. I one game at a time. Let's advance, and then we could have another update.
So I guess we should talk about the giant negative elephant in the room. United announced, I don't even know how long ago now, maybe a week, a little less, that they will be changing the way you and I earn redeemable miles, and it'll now be based completely on how much you spend for your ticket. So the multipliers are, for every dollar you spend, a general member of Mileage Plus will earn 5 Mileage Plus miles. Premier Silver will earn 7 Mileage Plus miles. Premier Gold will earn 8, Premier Platinum 9, 1K 11. And Rolo, you brought up a good point earlier, before the call, before we had the show, that Global Services isn't mentioned anywhere on the website for this. So we guess that they're going to earn the same as a 1K.
Yeah, I would think, unless it's just unpublished, and you know, maybe they get like 13 or 15 or something. Who knows?
Yeah. Interesting.
I would think it's going to be the same as 1K.
Yeah. So what they're really rewarding here, though, is what you spend. That's really the idea. And this is similar to Delta's program. This will go into effect March 1st of 2015. So all flights flown before that will still earn at the old elite multipliers and regular rates. So you'll still earn on the mileage that you flew. And then after that, then even if your ticket's booked now, but for after March 1st, it'll earn in the new program. So overall, I think this is, for me at least, it's a negative. I don't fly a lot of short-haul, really expensive routes, so that's where this really would make you a lot of miles, more than you're earning now. But the long-haul routes, you're going to more than likely earn less. So what do you think, Foz?
I'm personally all for it, but I guess I have to – why do you think you're going to earn less miles?
Well, because I've kind of done some research on what my fares will be, what I'll spend, and I know the distance. So on a typical transcon for me from Portland to Newark, I would earn 9,600 miles. Under this plan, the tickets run around $600. So under this plan, I would earn 6,600 miles.
Mm.
So okay. I lose out on like 3,300 miles.
Yeah, because I mean, I figure most of my, you know, even when I plan out, most of the cross country tickets are about $1,000, which generally means it's a wash.
Yeah.
I will make a killing on my Newark DC and Newark Boston flights. At Newark Harrisburg and God knows where else. I mean, I was doing the math. Like Newark DC, which I do almost every week. Right now, I get 1,000 miles round trip. I'll get 11,000.
Wow, that's big.
That's huge. I mean, it's interesting. I said this when Delta did it. I'm still surprised that they're doing this without changing anything about the credit card aspect.
And what do you mean? Like, just they're not changing the way you earn, or what were you expecting for the credit cards?
Well, that they're not changing the way you earn on credit cards. I mean, basically, all they're doing is the only people really being impacted by this are the mileage runners in math.
Yeah, but they're so. That's kind of been the trend anyway, right? That they're pushing. Their airlines are essentially credit card companies. I mean, that's no surprise, right?
It is and it isn't. I mean, they can control how. Let's take a step back. Why are they doing it? Because there are clearly too many miles out there. Too many miles are being burned for expensive awards. So we saw the first part of this when they raised the reward rates drastically. So this would probably be the second part of helping control their costs as to what they're outlaying. Now the question is, do they go back and revise the reward charts in a year, 2 years, to drop them? Because once they've eliminated all the cheap people and they've got high revenue people redeeming miles, do they adjust the reward rate to be what they should at that point?
Well, and see, that's kind of where I was going. Like, this isn't as big of a deal for me if they go back to the old rates or something close to them, right? And I mean more for partners. So if they go back to the old redemption rates for partners, then I'm happy because I still can redeem, and the miles that I earned are based on what I spent, so there's more value for United. And so I would say that the impacts would be a lot less hurtful if that was the case. I doubt that's going to happen, but, you know, at this point, it's a wash. I think where they're going to go with the credit cards is the sign-up bonuses. It's going to be one and done. They're going to get rid of all the, you know, every 12, 24 months, whatever, re-sign up and get, you know, another bonus.
But who does that at this point? Pretty much all of them have. Like Chase, you can only do it once in the lifetime of a card. Citibank was doing it once every 12, 18 months, but it sounds like they're also cutting back on that. I don't know about Delta, but Delta on its charge cards, you can only get the bonus once in your lifetime for a particular product.
Yeah. So you think they've already implemented it, and that's going to be it, and they're just going to change the way you earn when you spend.
Yeah. I mean, Chase did that years ago. You've never been able to get miles on a product once you've already had it. So like, if you had an Explorer card, they come out with a 100,000-mile offer, and you apply for it, you won't get the bonus points because you already have the product.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's really the best way to go about this? Do we just say, you know, earn your miles on your credit card? Is Chase Ultimate Rewards the best way to go about this?
Probably. I mean, I've always been a fan of the Ultimate Rewards and Membership Rewards because it gives you flexibility for when you need them.
Yeah.
Particularly when you don't have status, one of the challenges you have is finding inventory. So if you have United miles, you're limited to the inventory that United shows you. But if you have miles and Ultimate Rewards, you have a number of different options where to get your reward.
Yep, exactly. Well, so, I mean, I've thought about opening up a Chase UR account, and I probably have to pursue it. I don't think this is going to impact me to the point where I'm completely not sold on the program, but I think it will change my flying. I mean, I think this is going to change the flying for a lot of people who fly United simply because they value the miles. When there are cheaper options out there. Now, it's not going to completely kill off the program or anything, but I do think United hasn't done enough to fix the problems to start degrading the program. That's my general thought. They haven't done enough to fix the operational issues to make a degradation of the program worth it.
I don't know about you, but I got a 5-day EUA yesterday.
I haven't had a CPU in I don't know how long.
I fell out of my chair when I saw that come through on a transcon.
That's incredible, right?
Maybe,
there.
Well, maybe people already stopped flying United after the announced changes.
Well, I was looking at my corporate policy actually allows for business class, and I was just looking for my corporate policy allows for business class on transcons, and I was looking at just what they would cost and everything, and it's within our budget and stuff. I don't think the client would go for it, but United is priced above the competition. We have a corporate rate, and it's priced above the competition. And the product, I've flown PS, it's fine. But if I have a choice, I'd probably go with Delta.
And now they have, don't they have all flat seats at JFK LAX now?
Only LA, San Francisco, and Seattle, but how would you fly up to Seattle and then across?
Yeah, they have like almost an hourly flight now up to Seattle from Portland. So
now in your case, if you're doing this every week, is it worth the extra 2.5-3 hours each way to do that?
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm conflicted. Now, they do fly a transcon and just standard 739 Portland to JFK.
But did they finally add Portland?
Yeah, they have three flights a day, which is more than United. They're upping their schedule. I mean, they're almost competitive there now. United's are time better still, though. So,
it goes between 2 and 4 flights depending on the time of the year.
Yeah. So, I really don't know, Foz. I think if I was in a more of a business elite market, I would definitely fly Delta. Since I'm not, I don't know if going out of the way is really worth it.
And the question I posed in November, if you start flying Delta, those transcon flights don't get complimentary upgrades.
Yeah. So I'd have to use miles or some other kind of instrument, right?
Yeah. So if you're looking at that route, you're not going to have enough instruments to get all your miles. So the question is a domestic FC better than a live flight once in a while?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think, to me, my biggest fear with flying United on those transcons is that the A320 is prevalent on the evening flights back on the nonstop.
And I will say that it's things like this that are miscontinental, because I'm noticing that I'm getting more A320s on random stuff. And remember, these are all the flights that over the years Continental upgauged to 739s and 20-seat 738s. And now United has just pilfered all the premium markets, all the premium seats out of the market.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening here. It's that, you know, you're not able to get a decent seat on a transcon. And to me, that's where you should be putting your nicer coach seats. Even if it's coach, I don't mind as long as it's a good seat. I don't want to sit in a slimline for 6.5 hours. That to me is hemorrhoids waiting to happen. So, you know, I don't know. It's a toss up at this point. Like I said, I don't think the mileage alone will keep me from flying United. This new mileage earning. I think it's a mix of how terrible I've had operational problems and how many problems I've had getting tickets reissued and fixed that I really think is the kicker for me. If they fix that stuff, then I can put up with the mileage problems.
So what kind of problems have you had? I mean, the question I would pose, and I don't have an answer to this, is historically the transcons have been more reliable than connections or smaller flights because they treat them more like international. So it may be late, but it'll still go. I'm like sitting there for 3 hours and get scrubbed.
Well, so most of my problems are let's say my LaGuardia flights. I have yet to have a flight out of LaGuardia that left anywhere close to on time. Every flight, an hour or more delayed. Every single one. It doesn't matter if I take the 2 o'clock, the 4 o'clock, the 6 o'clock. It doesn't matter. I'm delayed. So I just get on the earliest one I can and hope. That's really my plan on Friday afternoons. and if things look like they're going south, like if it looks like it's coming from Chicago and it's already taken an hour and a half delay, I'm swapping flights. Like I'm moving. I'm even moving to the later flight sometimes because I figure the later one's probably going to go.
I don't know if I'm paying that attention. What are the turns like for the Houston flights out of LaGuardia? Because one of the things I know with the transcon, they often have a bigger buffer for the inbound.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they do 20-minute, 30-minute turns in LaGuardia.
And I think that's part of your problem. Like, the part of the problem is LaGuardia, they only have a finite number of planes, so they can't keep swapping things in and out.
Yeah.
Newark, they're a little better about that because I can't tell you the number of aircraft swaps I've seen in the last few months up until an hour before the flight. And I suspect it's because of a, you know, broken plane or delayed inbound or something like that.
So, that's not the only problem, though. It's like I flew Portland to Denver to Houston, and my Portland to Denver, I was paid first. Portland to Denver was delayed, and I had a 45-minute connection in Denver, and it quickly became 25 minutes, down to 15 minutes, down to there was no way I was going to make it, and they refused to do anything. I said, well, there's seats on Delta. Just put me on Delta via Salt Lake City in first, and the lady refused to do it. I called, and they refused to do it. It's things like I shouldn't have to fight for basic. I made the Denver flight. You know how I made it? Because the flight that I was connecting to was about 20 minutes delayed. So the only reason I ran to the gate and I made it as they were about to close the door. And the lady looked at me and she goes, I didn't think you were going to make it. And they were going to put me on the next flight, which was at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock Denver time, a red eye essentially, on an E-145 if I didn't make it.
I mean, it's hard. I've had some really – I mean, honestly, in the last 6 months, I've had better luck with United pushing me into the other tires than anyone else pushing me. But I think that a lot of that is the luck of the draw of the agent.
True.
And I mean, I do believe that United has some serious challenges with policies and policy enforcement. Because you still have a legacy, from the legacy Continental side, we all know how cheap they were. They all thought it was their own airline, so they never want to do anything. And one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of the agents have come around to the point where I just want to get you where you need to go. But then you still have the agents with the old mentality, which is, I'm paying for this out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And that's a culture thing that I just don't know how they're going to address. But, I mean, I've heard people with Delta, on Delta who Delta won't push them to other carriers.
True, true. So
that's just United.
The grass isn't always greener is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I don't know if you guys heard about this Barcelona flight, but apparently there's a video on YouTube. The flight got canceled, 2 days in a row?
I think it got canceled one day and delayed the second day. And the second day, the delay on the second day was only like half an hour because they swapped aircraft, moved them to a different gate. And like, it's really, when you watch the video, you'll be able to tell it's really just one woman who's trying to agitate the crowd, but she's just yelling and screaming.
There's a comment on YouTube, I guess, from a United employee working in Barcelona. And they're saying that it's rude to film people working under these stressful situations.
There's some good and bad news too. United announced that they're going to add Houston to Santiago, Chile. Sorry, Rolo.
That's bad news.
December 7th of this year.
At least it's not Newark, Santiago.
Oh my God, I would have protested. So I would have filmed a video
of yourself
on YouTube protesting at the gate.
So I'm booked on the inaugural. Rolo, are you booked on the inaugural?
I am not, because I refused.
Foz, you're booked, right? I think Seth is too.
I am booked.
Sweet. Well, I think we'll all be on there together, except Rolo. He'll be there in spirit.
I mean, maybe I'll show up. I'll fly a different carrier.
I think I'm going to buy Rolo some Chilean wine, bring it back.
You know, Chile today knocked Spain out of the World Cup. So right now, they think they won the World Cup. They're just – wait till you go down there, and you'll see how they are. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
So Seth was – the reason Seth isn't on the show is he was actually stranded in Chicago this evening. He was supposed to get back to New York, and we were going to record the show when he got back, and he got stuck due to some weather. But Seth has a whole plethora of things, and we're going to give you a little bit of a teaser. Seth was in Chicago for a go-go type event. They were doing some demos and things. He actually flew the Mint Transcon product. We want to hear his report on that. And he was at the Inside Delta event in Atlanta. Delta was doing some tours and some Q&A and just different things with how their operations are set up for bloggers and social media people. And Seth was invited. And then lastly, Seth was in Qatar for the IATA conference. And so I think Seth has a whole like laundry list of things that he needs to cover on the next show, right, guys?
It'll be the Seth show.
Yeah, he should just do it by himself, just him talking for 2 hours. I think we should tell him that. No, he'll hear it. He's going to edit this. He'll hear it.
And you know you will.
So I think we're going to just cover a couple other things. I wanted to get to Rolo's rant real quick.
My rant actually is twofold. One rant is against Foz.
What did I do?
Your time, yo. Hey, Foz, what time are you going to be on the call? 5 minutes. 12 minutes later, he's hopping on.
That was the slowest check-in I've ever had.
So that was rant one. Rant two was, on my flight back from Rio, the video system, apparently something, there's a problem, and the safety video only made it through to the first intro, the one they keep changing. And this week's version was how great the Mileage Plus program is and how it's got the most available seats of any program and it's won 5 years in a row, blah, 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 blah. And how this partnership with Marriott is so great and it's one of a kind and blah, blah, blah. And this is the same week that they announced the changes of earning. So not only did the video just was annoying, we had to see it twice because they started it over and they had to go back to the beginning and we had to hear that whole fiasco again. So
that's.
Does anybody wonder who's voting them number one 5 years in a row?
I think they tell you it's like a survey like that's done on I don't know, it's very like secretive.
It's all the people who use their miles to buy music.
a survey of United employees at Work Class Plus.
We're the best. Oh, man, that's awesome. Lastly, the American is going to start their retrofits for the 777s and the seating arrangements for the 777s in October, but they're actually going to have less seats in C in business class. What was the numbers, Rollo? You were telling me earlier they were actually going to have
– It went from 45 to 37 or something like that.
And then they're going to up – they're going to increase the number of – main cabin extra seats that they have by a few. I think it's like three or four.
Yeah, it was supposed to be 45 business class seats, and they reduced it to 37/36 for sale. And I think, yeah, you're right. I earlier said that they were reducing main cabin extra as well, but they're not.
They're actually going to increase it a few seats.
Right.
And they're increasing coach, I think, as well, just a little bit. We don't really know the reasons behind this. I think it was kind of a – they're looking at how many they're actually going to be able to sell on these 777s and stuff and figuring it out. But they started their Denver or their DFW to Hong Kong flight this past week, which is kind of cool. It's a long flight.
Yeah, but it's a 77-200, right? It's not
the
No, the long haul, the one for the Hong Kong, that's a 77W.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Incheon is a 772, and I thought Hong Kong was supposed to be a 772 as well.
No, maybe they're changing it, but the inaugural was definitely on a 77W.
Oh, okay.
So there was a trip report out there on Flyer Talk about it, and it's interesting. The only complaint the gentleman had was that they didn't really seem to have enough food for the 16 hours. They were under-catered as far as snacks and stuff. Like, the entire snack bar in business class was completely gone.
So that has to be their longest flight at this point.
I think so.
And, I mean, they have – think about it. The longest flight they did prior to this was probably Chicago to Delhi, and they haven't done that for a few years.
Yep. So they've got to get back in the groove of how many snacks they need.
Yeah, because the other thing is that was a red-eye flight. So Hong Kong Derry ends up being a day flight.
Yeah, I think it leaves at like 10 or 11 in the morning.
Yeah, so you're pretty much flying all day.
Yeah. So
just one little tidbit on that retrofit. Apparently, there will be some planes, 10 to 20 in service, before the retrofits change to the smaller cabins. So there's going to be some planes with 45 seats, and then after a while, they'll switch down to 37. And I guess they'll retrofit the retrofitted planes. Doesn't really make any sense why they would do this, but apparently this was clarified by American.
Interesting.
I suspect they're doing a little bit of experimentation.
Oh, okay.
To see what which cabin works better?
Yeah, I mean, they're going through a lot of shifts because those are going to go from three cabins to two cabins. So that's going to be a shift in, you know, and think about it. They have a couple of 777s, but most of their long wide bodies are still 772s.
Yeah.
So to take three cabins out of all those markets overnight, that's going to be a drastic shift.
Gotcha.
Well, didn't they shift all the London flights to 77Ws anyways?
Not the Chicago ones.
I mean, New York, sorry, New York to London. Yeah.
Well, if you've looked at the schedule, they used to fly five flights a day. They're doing three now.
Yeah, the day flight's gone, I think.
The day flight's gone. The late night flight's gone. The only ones they're running are the 6, 7, and 8 p.m., and everything else is on British.
So, yeah, they took out all the 772 flights then, I think. That's what they did. Just whatever was switched to 7Ws, they kept, and then they just got rid of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so they just gave more of the flying to BA. Miami's 7Ws. L.A. was already a 77W. And Dallas may be 1763.
Well, the 763s are getting retrofitted as well.
Yes.
With the, the Austrian-type seat, the 1-2-1.
The Delta one.
Staggered?
Yeah, staggered, yeah. So it's interesting. And it's, you know, they're doing a lot of different things, and they're really changing up that airline for sure. I mean, just the way they do the regional jets, you know, they're getting rid of those and having the 319s. It's interesting to see them kind of transition.
How friendly they become.
Yeah.
Why do you think they're getting regional jets? They're adding more regional jets, as a matter of fact.
Well, I mean, the little jets. I'm talking more like the CR7s and stuff. They're adding Embraers, right?
Right.
Well, I don't. People call those regional jets, and they are, but they don't feel like a regional jet.
No, they don't. I mean, well, they do and they don't. If you're in coach, they still feel like a regional jet. In first, they're a little better. But, I mean, I think with all three of the airlines are doing that. I think that's more of a – that's being driven by the shortage of regional pilots.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Oh, well, we could talk about this more with Seth because I think we need to wrap it up for the night. We said we'd give a quick teaser, so we got to kind of give a quick teaser. So, Foz, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
On Twitter as FozM and occasionally on upgrd.com/Foz.
And Rolo?
I am on Twitter at Mundo Surfer, and I'm on Tumblr at mundosurfer.tumblr.com.
I'm Steven Seagraves. You can find me at badice.com. I'm on Twitter at sseagraves. You can follow us on Twitter, the show, that is, at dotslines. You can follow us online at moredotsmorelines.com. And, you know, just leave us a Facebook comment, whatever you would like to do. This has been episode 56. We'd love to hear from you. Have a good time.
Take care, everyone.